speak one word. Bob, could you just sit here and not say anything for the whole 2 hours? Just gesture.
No one's ever applauded for me before.
And so we're going to record this in old style digital. And Bob, maybe we should just start out. You got any reflections on seeing the Bickford? You've worked with Zappa. What attracted him to utilizing Bruce? And any comments on the films we just saw?
Well, I think Bruce should get a life. This is ridiculous. Talk about the specialist obsession. Hey, the specialist obsession, that's what's driving us all nuts. I advocate a kind of corporate collective psychiatry. It's amazing work, but right. The guy is an idiot.
Right.
I mean, he spent his life doing that. He made his little figures. Who's it for?
Right.
And now Brett is doing another solipsist narcissist, writing books about himself.
I think creativity is a big problem. I think it's such a stereotype of the past 100 years, people being creative, and it's really getting in trouble. And we're getting the cancer from everybody being so goddamn creative.
Right.
This is really upsetting me. I think Zappa was the most creative guy ever lived. All this technology that we've invented was all great because it created Frank Zappa. Let's end it there. Frank was the greatest. He's better than Jesus. Okay, we got great music forever. We got creativity. And now we can, let's start communicating with this corporate psychiatry, whatever the hell that is. It'll take a while to explain. But next question.
Well, it'd be that goes to the roots of our great dialogue from Costa Rica. What year is it where you say entertainment sucks?
January 92 when Clinton was coming in.
And is it available on fivebody.com?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can listen to most of these.
Entertainment sucks.
If you have a lifetime to spend, you can go to fivebody.com and hear most of Bob's thousands of hours of tapes.
Yeah, Bruce guy, I mean, he gets screwed over by the medical establishment, and he spends 10 years talking about it, you know.
Right.
Why doesn't he do something about the situation?
Right.
You know, about medicine. He should join with my wife and, you know, start working on a real project. Like, kill the doctors, I say. Everybody, including, you know, you, Jerry. You as a doctor of recreation
right.
for the
right.
homeless, you know.
Right. Well, talk about entertainment sucks. That's where so most people come here, they want to be entertained. Most people would not think that entertainment should be something that sucks. That, you know, like you said, creativity.
Oh,
a lot of these people are artists.
Wait a minute, I mean, it sucks like gravity.
Right.
Entertainment attracts.
Okay.
It sucks in everybody.
Right.
It holds the world together is entertainment. They don't know what gravity is. They don't realize it's entertainment. Distraction is the third guy. What was his name? Cooler?
Yeah.
He says distraction, imagination is the, you know, the be-all, end-all life. I agree with that. Just we've overdone it. So, well, what did I say before that? Do you remember? See, you're not listening, Jerry.
I have memory problems.
Did someone else interview me?
Robbie will do a good job, I'm sure.
Yes.
So, So what about Joyce being creative? Did he...
wasn't creative.
He
didn't do anything. He just read the Encyclopedia Britannica, took excerpts every day, mutated, stuck a few other languages in there, and created a mess. And he knew this was meaningful. He was out to stop creativity. He'd done it with Ulysses, wrote the greatest novel. There was nothing to do after that. And then he had to put up with the side effects of himself becoming famous, which is real pain. So he did his damnedest to destroy his reputation by producing what looked like drivel. Turned out that it had a hidden agenda of communicating the digital culture, which has created mega entertainment and mega distraction and mega fun and mega masturbation, and he predicted it all. His book is Digital Culture before it showed up. And what is the effect of digital culture? A guy who can't talk. Everything revolves around the White House. And he's the greatest president ever lived because he refuses to acknowledge the role because he says we don't need this role. You want me to be president? My father killed everybody for 150 years, part of the skull and bones. No, okay, I'll be what they set me up for, but I'm going to ruin the institution. He's the greatest president who ever will live. He's showing us we're in a post-information society, a post-communication society. He refuses to communicate. Of course, all the creative people got all pissed off. All the smart people in Hollywood and L.A. and the place where I come from, New York City, and all this, you know, the blue states.
They all got pissed off. My God, this guy's ruining our kids. He can't talk. He can't show us and help us to be creative so we can get more kids to work in our stupid industry and make shit crap for everybody because entertainment sucks. Okay.
Bob, McLuhan said the telegraph caused the Civil War and the radio caused World War II, and then you took it one step further and said the cell phone caused 9/11.
Yeah.
And could you expound on that?
No, it's obvious. The internet created the present situation, the age of terror. I mean, you put on your computer, which is inside you, like the mark of the beast, and all you get is somebody sending you crap, spam, shit, and you got to answer half of it. You can't do anything in life without answering your fucking email. I mean, that's outrageous. Nobody's getting peace anymore. Bill Gates first to go, man, when you take over.
You'll be the dummy. What are we talking about?
Well, it's...
I'm just expressing my point of view. I'm trying not to be creative.
Right.
I'm trying to establish some facts here that we can work with.
Right.
You know, real... This is a manifesto, man. Yeah. And all you creative people are going to hate this. So if you're into creativity, leave. We're taking over. And actually, I did last year with the richest man in the world. He's a quadrillionaire. And it's... Well, I won't tell you. I've been good.
Okay. Well, let's go to that, because some people have trouble.
We ain't going to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
We're just going to cause psychic pain by shutting everything down.
The worst kind.
That's the worst kind. That's why McLuhan said TVs were far more dangerous than the atomic bomb. You can wipe out, you know, a few thousand, 100,000 people, a million people. There's still going to be a few who are going to live under the tyranny of television and Dan Rather for 400 years. That's worse. Jeez. Okay, let's get our priorities straight, right? That's what we're all about. Where's Alan? Look, Alan's here. That guy showed up 10 years. I heard what you said about me 10 years ago. Now, you think I just wing it? No, there's a language, there's a law here. Okay.
But it is partly what, when Marshall says the telegraph caused the Civil War, the radio caused World War II.
TV caused the Cold War, and the internet caused the present wars.
Right.
Plural.
Right, but I'm just saying maybe you can expound on that because people find that
hard to understand.
Like, Dave Emery, the political researchers, they'll say, well, Hitler caused World War II. How can something we invented have this cause and not humans? You know, people want to know more of the details, how you can explain that these creations that we make cause these wars.
Did your father cause any trouble in Flint?
No, but in 1934 they had one of the big sit-down strikes, so there
was part of that.
No, but I'm just saying my hometown that they dealt with causing trouble to, you know, bring in the unions.
What's that got to do with your father? See, there's no father involved, right?
No, that was just the environment of where I was raised.
Environment, the medium, the group, the all interaction. There's nobody who causes anything. There's an interplay with other humans which becomes a meme or a correct collective ESP depending on the tribal boundaries or parameters and uses the form of communication. That's what causes things. I'm not causing speech. I'm reacting to your speech. Where did I learn how to do speech? I don't know. I learned from a bunch of other people. Right? So there's nobody involved in the causes of factor in anything. There's a yin-yang, and then that's squared, so it's quadraphenic or a quadra-fourfold structure. Me, you, the other person, and the Holy Ghost, or the hidden environment. Media are the Holy Ghost. So we like to think that we are causing things. The West does, the individualist culture. Chinese don't think they started. What's the emperor doing? He just puts on everybody, not leading them anywhere. We criticize them for not using gunpowder or stuff the way we did. They had nowhere to go. They just enjoyed their senses. They just were a bunch of Bruce Pickfords, you know, celebrating themselves. Some pretend to be slaves to the other guys. He said, well, I'm not going to create any calligraphy. I'll just go around, mow the lawn, or, you know, do the stuff. Do as little as possible. Eat a bit of food, you know, make love, and that's good enough. Simplicity is the fruit of humanity. All right, so our creations create complexity. So obviously, the Westerners will think individuals cause something. They think, now we know the Westerners, our individualist culture has been collectivized by electric media, so now we think a committee caused something. Why is there conspiracy culture everywhere? Some committee, the Skull and Bones, the Bilderbergers, Federal Commission, or my Chief Counsel 10, are causing all this stuff. They're not. But we can't even think of an individual doing it. But as the world implodes and there's only one person left, which the Android meme is, and that's the White House, then we think the White House caused everything. And that's true in terms of the electric media effect and the digital effect.
The digital creates a Rumpelstiltskin. Who was Rumpelstiltskin? A guy who hijacked the whole village because they didn't know his name. And we need a new name, a new grammar, a new form of knowledge, a new apple from the tree of knowledge to figure out how to state what's going on. Nobody knows how to state it except for me. Okay? You know. So I can explain a lot of things, right? You know.
Yeah. Next question.
Yeah. Next question. Did someone say next question?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, no, someone. Oh, you don't have the next question. Someone,
okay.
You mind, Jerry?
No, go ahead.
About, he asked you if the cell phone caused this situation.
Caused 911.
And you said yes, and then you said no. And in fact, you said nothing really causes any one thing.
No one person.
No one person.
Yeah.
Okay.
The environment, the technologies cause it.
So,
and that includes the first one, speech.
So without it, you're saying if the cell phones were never invented,
yeah, we wouldn't be here today.
9/11 would not. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So the cell phone, it was an interesting Rumpelstiltskin thing. It allows you to go around all previous media. I mean, when the satellite extended the whole planet after individual media extended our senses up to 1957, then the satellite global theater started to shrink in the 60s and 70s. It was digitized. So now the satellite theater and all the media inside are in your little Palm Pilot, your little iPhone or whatever, okay? So that allows you to float around all the media like originally Sputnik did. It went around all the media. So that sense of autonomy the kids have or anybody has is symbolized by the cell phone, where whoever did it, whatever committee or gang or group did it, they used the cell phone to go around, to go under, to para. Para means to go all around, below, be home, behind, you know, not post or modern. Paramodern was, they went around the surveillance system and went inside and did it with a cell phone. Now, this is hard to believe, so everybody has to project at the bombs and holograms and missiles. But the real hidden truth is that when the cell phone guys who did it did not know it would collapse completely. What happened when the whole world was watching it and thinking about it, and the majority of people saying, hey, I'd love to see that fall, the towers themselves, which Baudrillard wrote about in the 1970s, was a living new digital reality, what I call the Android meme, they're inside this broadcasting, this extra cloned ESP that everybody's engaged in, and it felt humiliated, the two towers. All right, so they killed themselves. They committed suicide with some little fucking Rumpelstiltskin object when it allowed these idiots to come in and blow them up. So the Sheik and them, they didn't realize it would collapse, but it collapsed because they, the buildings, caused a disaster of integrity for themselves. So the point is that electric media, like speech, is alive. And when everybody's looking through electric media, we've never encountered this before, we're looking at a bunch of stones that our feeling, our conscience, everybody here believes we're all one, right? The Gaia stuff and everything, everybody says we're all matter and soul and nuts and bolts, that responded to the living effect of the electric perception. Couldn't have happened before the internet or before CNN. So that is the meaning of this situation. How alive we are was the meaning of that. So to counter, we start killing everybody and worrying that we're gonna get killed. Natural balance as a result of creativity. We're always compensating for whatever did happen. That's the natural juggling of senses. You listen and you hear, you touch, you smell, you move. All responding to whatever medium heightens one particular aspect of that. Constant juggling. So you got several phases of causation in there. But just think about it. The whole world looking at these huge buildings, the symbolic power of those two things. What people thought, they thought it represented the United States or something, you know. But the whole world doesn't live in the United States anymore. It lives in the discarnate chip body, the chip landscape. So here it is looking and hating those buildings. Buildings just couldn't take it. They're alive. They're like us, man. They don't want to be that hated. It's okay. We're out of here, guys. And so the American, which believes in nuts and bolts and hardware metaphors of how things are made, they got to say, shit, man, it didn't commit suicide. It was caused by some kind of bomb or something. You know, try to tell this to Alex Jones, he'd go nuts. Actually, I did tell him years ago.
Bob, talk about
he's so American, which is a stupid thing to be because there's no other cultures, no America. We have to realize we ain't anywhere where we think we are. We don't have any language to discuss what we're at. The closest thing is spinning his wake, and that's mere gibberish, but at least he was honest about it. After making the greatest creative act, he responded to the later radio environment that way.
But it was good that you brought that back up, because it's like you said, words evoke more than their meaning. And you talked about how...
just take that.
Yeah.
They invoke an environment. Everybody engaged in the perceptions of speech. It's a sensory act. It's like surfing. Man, anybody can say this, and you think you know what I mean. Isn't that amazing? I say stuff, and you actually figure out what I seem to be saying, and then you respond psychically? That's an environment. It wasn't what was said. It was the environment of the whole act of speech.
Right. And you said...
Verbal's a small part of the effect.
Yeah.
It's sensory, man. It's like sleeping, dreaming, screwing. That's what communication is. It's the greatest thing humans ever did.
We attract what we hear most and make it...
No, now you're getting a platitude. Look at the words. You said we. Who's the we? The
we
is the...
Humans.
No, but the humans are known through media or communication or speech. You, our body, look at another body. This was created by something. I don't know. Maybe it was us with souls, and we reincarnate and create the spirit, okay? If you go into theosophy, you can say that's the cause. Basically, I didn't make me, you didn't make me, but we did make this thing that's communicating while we're wearing clothes and listening to this and all this media. That's what's talking. We're souls that come in here. We reincarnate. We come in with our issues from previous lives, and then we got to interact with all this media evolution of technology, which I call second nature, and that confuses your first nature goals of your soul trying to connect with something when you come in here. Usually we're souls from another plane. If we're so overwhelmed with the Akashic Records, all that's going on, because all the lives are happening all at once, we want to create a little problem. So we create a little, I'm going to work with you, we're going to nail him, go to the desk, we're going to come and set up. In the meantime, I got to go learn literacy, I got to go on television, I got to learn how to text, I got to go back and do all this media work while I'm still just trying to nail him. That's the joke. When Frank said earlier, didn't see it, he said, reality is absurdity, right?
Yeah.
That's an inarticulate, simplified version of what I'm saying. The interaction of first nature and second nature media is the humor of humans. Okay? And the humor of technology. So we die, we go back, we work out our soul drama, come back. Meanwhile, technology carries on. It's always growing here on the planet. It's the call of the second Adam in the Bible. This establishment that Adam created after he left the Garden of Eden, what was knowledge? And he's creating all this stuff, all this creativity that's creating the whole world in itself. So you reincarnate in the middle of that, it's pretty hard to connect with your original issue. Now, where was the pain when we first created on the astral plane? You know, where is it? Well, shit, I'm here. What is this? Where, you know, I'm feeling, experiencing. Maybe it never started. It was always there. One moment. It's all one moment, right? That we're experiencing. For drillings of a second, as Dave Worster says. Featured on my website soon. When I attempt to communicate.
You talked about 9/11 being... happening on 9/11, and that's the phone number we dial on our cell phone when there's an emergency, and the towers themselves were the place that
very
broadcast.
So, yeah, no, this is what
so
I.
So that's why I'm saying words evoke more than their meaning.
Right. We could say God's eye view or the goddess view or the its view, but let's call it the linguistic unconscious. The interesting thing in Finnegan's Wake, written from 22 to 39, James Joyce describes exactly what happened and what would happen with a person named Marshall McLuhan. Marshall McLuhan wasn't even around really then. How did he know that? Well, the words did it, not him. He channeled it. Okay, you come to 911. What did they bomb first? They bombed the tower with the TV antenna on it that covered the five boroughs of New York. Now, you know, in Britain, they call television the telly. So the telly band came in to ban the telly, a little media apology, and they knocked out the tower of the TV antenna first. All right. Now, there was a follow-up. So that's the meaning of the telly band. The other thing is the 911 pun. You know, it was whoever sold the cell phone, it was like you can save your kids when they're drowning in a swamp or something, right? They can call you and you run and get them. So the alert, the emergency meaning of that. So... well, how do we follow from that? If 911 is a pun on the emergency causes of cell phone, then language, which is all the media developed up to that point, did a pun on humanity. Says, okay, we're going to create a situation, an emergency you can't solve, and we're going to do it with an instrument you thought would solve it. And so the pun is on 911. Probably more than I could say. Look at the puns that communication media make on us. It's always talking to us. So James Joyce didn't write that. Language wrote about Marshall McLuhan. I've been predicted for years. I mean, The Matrix 1 is about me. The Matrix 2 and 3 is incredible. Twin Peaks. And there's more and more puns in Xenocrony I could tell you about. And journalists have read about this. And I'm not talking about me, this body here. I'm talking about the brain or the communication media that I'm responding to and has learned how to talk about this. That is. So I'm possessed right now by a spirit or something of a collective media up to this point. The artist always was attuned into the present and tuned into the scientists that are happening and what they create, at least in Western society for the last, say, 1,000 years. I'm an artist, scientist, responding to what the android meme is making. And he keeps putting me in there as a joke on me, because it's alive and ironic, and he keeps mentioning me and saying, yeah, we know Bob's the gold standard to figure out what to do to imitate human, because the android meme wants to be as much as human as possible, so you don't notice it. So use me a gold standard, and it goes from there into not being me. But it sticks in references to me all the time. I probably am in channel. I mean, personally, I'm not responsible for what I'm saying here. You know, me, this first nature boy. I got issues with my wife and everything. I got personal soul issues too, right? I am trying to tell you people how to communicate. You should be able to channel this stuff yourself if you memorize it for about 10 years. And you shouldn't do that. If Bruce Bickford can make clay things for 100 years, you can meditate on my shit for 10 years, right? Because that's not my shit. It's what the mouth is saying. I used to live in Dartmouth, Nova Scotia. I'm the darting mouth. You know, the place I was in molded me. It molded the medium, the whatever, the thoughts that come out. Remember, we don't live at the speed of light anymore. We're taping this. We live at the speed of light. No, I'm sorry. I made a mistake. The other bad spirit got in there. That started to screw me up. We used to live at the speed of light. We now live at the speed of thought. Now, figure out, how do you live at the speed of thought? That means everything is instantly understood and there's nothing to say. George Bush, perfect president for the age of speed of thought.
But yeah, McLuhan says, I don't know what I think until I've said it.
Good point. Yeah. Good point.
And Bob, wait. Hey. One more second. When you're
one
laughing,
more second.
We called this little seminar tonight, When You're Laughing, You're Learning. And it's funny because a lot of these people are serious political researchers, and every time you say something like Alex Jones, they'll laugh.
Yeah, so they're learning.
They're learning. But can you explain that in regards to Gurdjieff and the yes and no, and what is it when we're laughing, we're learning?
Well, I was reading this quote today to you from McLuhan, where sensation is always imitation. And by sensation, it's what our senses are taking in. So right now, we're all involved in imitation because the actual organism of reality is one step ahead of us. So the present is a hidden, invisible ground. Now, just give me a clue to what you said. Just say one word.
When you're laughing, you're learning.
Oh, yeah.
Yes and no. Okay.
No, might need a little more.
Okay.
What was the joke you said? Alex Jones.
They're really going, this guy's a fucking nut.
No,
you always said, I
want
to go with the 9/11 truth.
I got it, Alex Jones. Okay, take the single. Go fast. Okay. The Alex Jones is an archetype for the Rumpelstiltskin who's going around the mainstream media, right? He's exposing the fallacies of lie. He doesn't know in a post-information society it's okay if media lies, because we're just there to have imagination and be distracted by anything on TV. It's engaged with TV. He's not lying. So if these people here in that kind of political work, then I point out that they have to learn something, a pattern that they lack. So you come to a conclusion, you come to an epiphany, a leap, but what is driving you, and you don't know what? So I show them the key of truth.
So they listen to Roy, or they listen to Art Bell, and they don't usually laugh. They sit around and practically
They worry.
So they ain't fucking learning, right?
Oh, no, they're learning, but they're not laughing. When you're laughing, you're learning. They're worrying. All right? It's the need to have... Okay. It's really, we're all on acid. And technically, electric environment is an extension of the central nervous system. What does acid do? Or psychedelics? Extend your central nervous system. You get inside the dream. So if you're always in this electric stimulation, your brain needs to make sense out of it. You know, when you're on drugs and the new patterns happen, you're always trying to figure out what it is. Often you get into a crisis point of, shit, a devil's coming through. No, an angel. And I got this video. Look, Google Bob Dobbs in Hyde Park. It's unbelievable. I went to Hyde Park a couple of weeks ago, and a guy came along, and he taped me interacting with the fundamentalist Christians against the fundamentalist Islam guy, Muslim. But this other guy, he looked Islam. He comes around, and he's going, he can't speak. He's a mute. And he's going... and he's going back and forth like in the massive comedy and tragedy. It's unbelievable. It's the funniest. I mean, some of my friends saw it in Halifax. Said, this is the greatest video you've ever produced. You know, I didn't do nothing. I just got it and then put it up. But the up and down of the space is what you're doing when you're on drugs. You're going, yeah, it's optimistic and hot. No, it's negative. You know, and it goes faster and faster on the subatomic level. And drug, it stimulates that, and it happens faster. So we're all doing that
Warner watching Electric Meteor. We're going, oh, Bush is going, hey, no Warner, oh, shit, he's going back in. Oh, here comes Obama. Hey, oh, Obama's an asshole. And you're always reacting, and you're filling in senses. You're filling in patterns. If you don't listen, you don't have to make pattern recognition. But everybody's engaged, so you have to do a little. But do it real lazily. Don't even bother. Say shit like I do. If I get on the radio, I say the most absurd patterns going. And usually, the luck of it is that I'm right.
Right.
I don't know how. That's a mystery wrapped in enigma inside a riddle. Joe Pesci and JFK.
Remember when we used to have you on KPFK and they would call up afterwards and they'd go, I don't know what that guy's talking about, but I know he's talking about something.
Yeah, that's right. He's talking about something. I'm showing how you make sense. It's not the content of what they say, but I'm able to make instant sense of whatever pattern's presented to me. Because I cracked the code, which is what I was going to say about Pickford. I was thinking, yeah, I'll say get a life. Because
right.
I know the process of cognition. I know what the creative process
right.
is in the little chemical brain. But I'm looking at the Android meme and how it's making creativity. We need to look. And James Joyce and Zappa and McLuhan figured out how to look at the process of creativity and present it back to you while pointing to the larger creativity caused by the Android meme. The Android meme is technology coming alive and then gradually disappearing. And now the kids, all those massive media environments of the last 150 years are nowhere. They're inside the little thing. They see newspaper, they see radio, and they don't even see it that way. Basically, there's no separate media. But when in the 20s and 30s, like I was, when you were in Germany and Hitler was doing the public addressing, it was a big radio environment. That was a huge drum you were inside of. It was huge. Like, what the hell's going to happen here? And so was the telegraph. Telegraph caused civil war. You never learned that in high school or whatever, right? Here in the States.
Right.
So the kids today don't have a sense of media being bigger than them. They're bigger than media. Android means fooling them. They're all going to get cancer and die by the age of 35 for all kinds of environmental reasons. But right now, they're on top and editing and all that stuff, selecting a whole media world, which is like a matrix.
Yeah.
Why did I go into that? I don't remember.
Because Gurdjieff reconciling the yes and the no.
The yes and the no. See, the dialectic of consciousness, we're all doubleness. We got two eyes, but just think of it. This thing I was saying about us going back and forth, that's just the doubleness of consciousness. You wake up, you go to sleep. You think one impulse and then you counter it, depending on cultural conditioning. So the oscillation of doubleness has been squared by the Android meme, so we get doubleness projected back to us. The unanswerable, you know, they do a news broadcast, give you bad news, and then they say at the end, well, you know, everything's great, you know, we got a baking going on after this. So, I mean, they always dismiss it, but then there's a nice little human interest story. So the doubleness is right there in the 60 and the 30-minute news story. The doubleness all over goes inside us, so we got original doubleness, and then the manufactured media doubleness makes quadrophenia. Schizophrenia is not the problem. Quadrophenia is the problem, but if you recognize the answer, the solution is in the problem, which is what I'm telling you, then we really beat them. If we just said a few of these things when you call and tap show, I don't care what anybody's listening, man, nobody's listening, but say these things back to the Android meme. Rush Limbaugh is a subsection of the Android meme. And so is, who's a nice guy here? Roy of Hollywood.
Roy of Hollywood.
These idiots who keep thinking they have the right to keep broadcasting. What the hell, you know, why are they keep... Why is there always a Dan Rather, or who is it today? I don't watch it. I don't really know anything about it anymore. Whoever is your regular news broadcaster, why do they think they have the right? Like Oprah, she goes on every day. What a terrible life to do the stupid shit she does every day, and totally, even though it has nice platitudes, nice humanist concepts, it's irrelevant because it's keeping people glued, and then they get problems from the TV screen that she thinks some little therapy book will solve, but it was caused by the TV screen, which she keeps going by putting the charisma on there. That's so stupid what everybody's doing. Oh, of course, that we know that. I like what Bukowski said. Humanity, you know Charles Bukowski, the great L.A. poet? He said humanity screwed up three-quarters of its past, is going to screw up three-quarters of its future. Ah, that leaves that little bit in the middle, the present, which is the now. But remember, the Android meme erases now. There is no now, so you can't live in the moment anymore in terms of what language has done. The subatomic physics is about particles that mean three places at once, right? Basically, you can't determine where it is at the same time as speed. That's just a simple visual-based Gutenberg, Newtonian, Einsteinian bunch of guys conceptualizing the fact there is no now in terms of communication. I'm known for saying everything's disappeared. If you say, Bob, I'm here. Yeah, your first nature body's here, but communication and its consequences has disappeared on all levels. That's why the little kids live in their tubes. They got nowhere to go. I mean, that's what... Did you say something about Bickford? You said it in, like, when I was in the back. room there. I think I heard you say in 50 years it'll be considered a great artist or something.
That's what I predict. He'll be like
right.
Yeah,
but the thing is that he's totally resonant with the present. He's like the little kids, like the Japanese kids now, who refuse to leave their bedroom for 2 years. You heard about that phenomenon? Little kids won't come out. They just love being on their chip body. There's no need, nowhere else to go with their chemical body. He'll be a hero for those guys. But that is not really, he does not present the causes of the situation. I present the effects and the causes. Marshall McLuhan created a greater discovery in Einstein, building on Wyndham Lewis and James Joyce. I'm the first to understand what he understood, and so I'm the greatest scientist artist alive today. All right, if we needed one. We don't need one. That's why I'm here in this homeless zone where we're
Congratulations, Jerry.
Yeah, Bob, tell me, because this, we recently have had, well, how long has it been out? There's a book called Understanding Me, which is Marshall. Now, for those who didn't know, Marshall McLuhan wrote books from 1940 to 1980, approximately wrote 22 books, but his books are unreadable. But, you know, you should read
because he was trying to translate
right,
things. Word.
Right, yeah. But his daughter released a book of his public speaking. Uh-huh. So Understanding Me is him talking. Now, he explains well in that book something that might be good to talk about, and that is what the medium and the message really means. So people think, well, the medium and the message is when you're watching TV, it doesn't matter what you're watching, it's the fact that you're watching TV. And a good example...
Using TV. It's not just watching.
And a good example is I went up to my niece once, I says, why are you watching this? Because it was some stupid show. And she goes, because nothing else is on.
Yeah.
So meaning I've designated this time in my life to veg out and watch TV. There's nothing wrong with that. But it didn't matter what was on. It was just her staring at this box and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, because it's massaging them, and the brain needs it. And for kids today, they're not right hemisphere or left hemisphere. They're corpus callosum. They're in between. They're even the smartest, most advanced, creative jerks that we've ever experienced. And we'll all be so proud of them while the world becomes unfamiliar. But it's the corpus. The corpus callosum is what's being extended by the present technology, the in-between. What is it? Accentuate the positive. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Right, that's it.
That ancient song.
He says the medium is the message. Really means if we say the medium is the car, that what he's actually saying is. Do you want to explain it? Yeah.
Yeah. Most people say, well, when we were saying that the telegraph caused the Civil War. And radio caused the Second World War, McLuhan said, no technology changes or causes anything. It's the effects of the new technology on the old technologies. The old technology is the medium, and that's what changes because it's forced to adapt to the hidden effects of the car. So actually the car does change society, but you have to indicate that the car is going to create an environment. It's just a figure for the gas stations and the oil companies and all the stuff to maintain your use of the car, and how that affects the older media that's already been established. So that's the paradox. It's a very complex statement.
So
he said, when he explains this in the late 70s, he says, the medium is the message, and he explains it, and he says, I've hesitated to explain this to people because he didn't want to get too complicated.
Right.
He knew it was, but why bother? Because he knew there's nothing. He said the goal of his time was not to communicate. Perfect statement. And this psychiatrist comes on, I heard on CBC in 1970, 37, 38 years ago, he comes, the psychiatrist, I was on the panel, McLuhan said, the purpose is not to communicate, and he says, I thought that was disgusting. I think we need more communication between people. Recognize that, Oprah Winfrey stuff. We need people to listen, we have to develop our relationship, blah, 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 you know, all this crap about our chemical body, and we're not acknowledging our chip body, TV body, and our astral body. So, McLuhan said, don't communicate.
Right.
And he was the greatest actor, and you think I don't know what I'm talking about, call Mary McLuhan, his favorite daughter, who's appointed me president CEO of the Marshall McLuhan Center on Global Communication, and we're setting headquarters up in Maui next week, okay? I have won the mantle. Hey! I am the McLuhan.
Well, tell him how Marshall and why did he update? Most people don't realize he updated
the present.
The medium is the medium is the message,
yeah,
to the user's content. What in the heck does user's content mean, and why did he update it?
Okay, so up to his point, you read Understanding Media and you see, okay, speech did this, writing and the printing press did that, and radio did this. He takes each separate medium. And he knew in the 60s, when he did Understanding Media, that media were now becoming intermedia. Inside the satellite matrix, they were starting to feed off each other, and the boundaries were disappearing. By the late 60s, when he did his Playboy interview, he said, we need to understand the medium as the message, and we have to see that, and then when we understand what that means, then we can decide what the content would be. Now, he italicized content, because he knew that the media had imploded, and it became one microphone, known as the White House. And whoever controlled that microphone and determined whether something happened to Roswell, or who killed Kennedy, or whether there was a war in Vietnam, or whether we land on the moon, all those paradigms could be defined by one microphone in the White House. So whoever got that microphone was the environment, was the medium, and he was the content. They had fused. In the mid-60s, the medium and the message, the figure and the ground, the form and the content had fused. And it's all about, that's why do Americans get so involved in the presidential election? The original meaning was it was a religious ritual to establish that we're a bureaucracy, we're the first country ever built on the printing press, and that's hierarchical, and we're going to maintain that. And every 4 years, we'll establish that fact. But in the middle of all that, the electric media made an implosion where the most important and only existing communication fulcrum is the White House, and who gets that microphone? The presidential campaign should never end. And, you know, it should never, if someone wins, Ron Paul should declare he's president now and cause all kind of fragmentation by doing that. And after John McCain wins, he should continue running, and we should all demand the reporters to keep covering the election and drive us all nuts to prove that that's all that's important. It's the White House who runs the microphone. I've been running for president for 14, 15 centuries. Because we live 200 years every 12 months under electric speed up compared to any previous civilization. So 1,400 years, figure it out. What's that, 7 years?
Is that why LaRouche did that for so many
years? No, yeah, LaRouche is a good guy. He's smart. But he's limited. He's still working with the left hemisphere and the printed effect and literacy. And his medium is very specialized. He doesn't understand it comprehensively. But I'm the one who created LaRouche. You know, that just for the record, if you go on my site, fivebody.com, and read my diaries, Android Memes, and Ocrity, you will see I had a meeting on June 18, 1967. Who was that meeting? Who was at it? Marsha McLuhan, Frank Zappa, Linda LaRouche, Dr. Beter, Mae Brussel. Krishnamurti spoke to them, and Garrett Dean was there, and who am I leaving out? Oh yeah, Herbert W. Armstrong, Worldwide Church of God. I set up my whole army, they went on and changed all kinds of situations. Their after image is still here, but I'm here to say where the after image came from. Me. I created all that you're involved in terms of content, or at least the best content, all right? Herbert W. Armstrong's the best fundamentalist. You ever listen to him? He's very good.
From
not
Pasadena.
Political. Yeah, oh, right here, a lot comes out of it. I loved L.A. I came out here in 58. For the Mojave UFO sightings with George Adamski. Our Secret Council 10 was very upset and worried about what this ET stuff was. So I came out here in 58, and I'm at a little club in Lancaster, and I see these two teenagers talking at the intermission of a Bo Diddley concert, and I go over and I hear one guy go tight and tapered, and the other guy goes fast and bulbous. I wonder what that was. Are they aliens or what? I start talking to them, turned out to be young Frank Zappa, 18 years old, and young Don Van Vliet. I was friends with them from that point on. Okay, that's 1958. L.A. is my main place. You know, I've been coming here for decades. I surfed here in 66. That's where I first started. L.A. is a matrix of creativity because I favor L.A. over New York. What's Annie Hall about? Remember, McLuhan's mother was named Hall. Annie Hall is actually a relative in this family. Does Woody Allen know that? I don't know. But it's the linguistic unconscious making a pun on the whole McLuhan thing, who's a key part of the movie.
Wait, there's a good point.
I didn't finish, so I don't know where I'm going.
But what's the beginning, Eli, what's the beginning of your film, Death Con Bob, the quote from Joyce?
Oh, yeah, let me be Los Angeles.
There, in Finnegan's Wake, there is a sentence that says, let me be Los Angeles.
No.
Yeah.
Now,
Don, all right.
Okay, well, before just to finish, okay. Los Angeles is about my wife and I, because James Joyce met me when I was a kid. My father was a butler in the Secret Council of 10, and he knew about all that stuff, and he knew I was kind of precocious. So he embedded me in the book. So I was part of the Finnegan's Wake Society. He has one here. We had one in New York. And we'd be reading along, group reading Finnegan's Wake, and I'd read the section, and I go, hey, or someone would read it, and I go, hey, that's about me. And there's Carolyn. Carolyn's there, and we'd look and talk about, yeah, that's about us. We thought it was about us, and we knew it was, because we knew Joyce when we were kids. But
after about three sessions, his dentist spoke up and said, "I'm sick of hearing about you, Bob. You're not in the content." He died 3 weeks later. I had nothing to do with it, but don't mess with language. Don't mess with the medium.
Now, this is a moment I've been waiting for 20,000 years. Don meets Bob, finally.
Who's Don?
Well, Don is probably the greatest bookstore historian, L.A. bookstore historian, besides a great
book. L.A. bookstore?
Yeah, all titles. Yeah, but L.A. bookstores and just modern-day things.
Back to Los Angeles. We keep with Los Angeles. Marshall McLuhan messages. What is Los Angeles? What is Spanish for the angels? And what is an angel? An angel is a messenger.
Right now, and Wyndham Lewis, who started all this, he was the great secret fountain for Pound and Eliot and Joyce. He wrote a play in 1914 called Enemy of the Stars. Okay, in it is the first description of discarnate, electrified human beings, disembodied human beings. He later went on for years developing that. His key metaphor was L.A. and Hollywood and the angels. The discarnate effect, the TV landscape later, so the angels. But here's the problem why L.A. is obsolete. Once we had radio and then television and computers, we are super angels. Because an angel can be wherever it wants to be in all dimensions, but when it's there, wherever it is, that's the only place it's it. Now, we're on the electric media. We are everywhere. We're nowhere all at once, so we're super angels, which has always been the issue about angels and man. It looks, says in the Bible that men created language, and that includes women. Humankind created language, the only thing angels couldn't create, and so they were pissed off about that. Now, language has been extended to this electric environment. This is a beautiful epiphany, what I'm telling you. All this electric media that's been an extension of the linguistic unconscious had created the situation, we're super angels, we're greater than the angels. We still beat them. Now think of this. This is never been said before. This is an important theological insight.
Great. Now, Bob, there's another good one here. Edmund Carpenter, who was the first...
He worked out of L.A.
Northridge. Was the first guy to say, let's give cameras to these anthropological species we're studying. Let them film. And we've shown John Bishop's film about Edmund Carpenter. Oh, what a blow what's the first line in Oh, What a Blow the Phantom Gave Me about electricity has turned us into angels?
Yeah, now Ted was a poor student of McLuhan. I mean, he was a great guy in the 50s with McLuhan, but he didn't understand the super angelic effect. All right, okay. So he dropped out, and he became bitter about his life with McLuhan.
Okay.
Read the appendix in Don Field's book, The Virtual Marshall McLuhan. It's not accurate, but it's true. Remember, Ted Carpenter claims, and it's probably true, that he wrote Half of Understanding Media. And he says that's the reason when reviewers read McLuhan, Understanding Media, they thought it was one guy writing this, and they didn't understand the kind of discontinuity of the styles. That's because two people did it. And Marshall probably let that happen as a joke.
Another great thing you could review quickly here is why Marshall's review of Naked Lunch in the Nation magazine is so important. What did he reveal?
It's incredible. December 64, Nation magazine, his review of Nova Express and the Naked Lunch. Now,
by Marshall McLuhan.
A review by Marshall McLuhan. So on April 11th, I went to Cambridge in England because Ben Watson called me up just before I was leaving. I just wanted to go down and see what the university looked like today. And he said, you meet anybody there? And I said, no. And he said, well, go see Ian Patterson. That was his professor, the one who helped him study Wyndham Lewis in the 70s. Ben wrote a very good paper on Wyndham Lewis when he was 22. So I go to Cambridge and I visit Ian Patterson for an hour and a half. He's never met before. He's been told I'm coming. I walk in. I said, first point. I said, let's get right into details. I got to go back in an hour and a half. First point, I was told that you have studied and can prove what every character in Wyndham Lewis's novels, what person it refers to. Do you agree with the Black Sparrow Press edition of Apes of God that who they say the people, the characters represent, would you agree with that? And he said, I can't remember. I said, okay, let's deal with the next thing. Sheila Watson has done a PhD. She's a great American novelist, big inspiration for Margaret Atwood and everybody, wrote The Double Hook in 1959. She was a student of McLuhan at that time, a PhD student, and did the greatest PhD on Wyndham Lewis. Wasn't published till 40 years later, in 2005. She points out that in The Childer Mass, that the main character called the bailiff is not just the BBC, but the content of BBC. That's why if you read a review, if you don't want to take the time to read the whole book, just read a summary of it. The bailiff changes all the way through the book. Why is he changing? Because he represented the different programs on the schedule. People didn't understand the radio effect back then, didn't even notice it. So I'm telling this to Ian Patterson. I said, did you know that the bailiff represents the BBC and the changing content? He looks at me and says, that's extraordinary. I said, that's right. And I said, you're a scholar of Wyndham Lewis. You've got to look at Sheila's essay or PhD, and I'll send it to you. So he says, great, I'm looking forward to that. Now I said, what do you make, are you aware of the review of Burr? Okay, so then he says, because I didn't bring this up, he said, I look at Wyndham Lewis through Burroughs. Oh, okay. Have you read McLuhan's review of Wyndham Lewis, of Burroughs? And he said, no, I didn't know it existed. Okay, you got a computer? Yeah. Went over to the computer, Google it, and I get him to read through every line. McLuhan makes a review, he enumerates it, 11 points. One. You don't do that in reviews in New York Review books, but he made one of the 11 points he called Notes on Burroughs. So he reads through it slowly, every line, and he is blown away that this said a lot more than people understood McLuhan was saying in 1964 when Understanding Media came out and then when this was written. You read that, you'll see the most advanced point in there. One of them, he says the universe had an orgasm 100 years ago. Think of that. Biological universe had an orgasm 100 years ago. Burroughs is playing catch-up. And he goes on about how Burroughs is redoing James Joyce, and James Joyce ain't that... He's a little paranoid, McLuhan says. It's Wyndham Lewis who's detached. It's one of the rare places where he points out his allegiance to Wyndham Lewis and not Joyce, even though everybody thinks McLuhan is pro-Joyce. He is pro-Joyce, but McLuhan's a quadriphenic. He juggles all the vortices. T.S. Eliot, Pound, Lewis, and Joyce, with W.H. lingering as the Rumpelstiltskin. Juggling those four in different situations determines...